Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Fargo is rocking tonight, and it's a scientific reawakening occurring all over the country. And thanks so much to each and every one of you for taking time out of your evening to attend. This is hotter than going to a movie. This is better than going out to your favorite restaurant, which you can do afterwards, to basically buckle in and learn more about the last 2 years that's impacted us so greatly. As introduced, I'm Dr. Peter McCullough. I'm a practicing internist and cardiologist in Dallas, Texas. I had patients yesterday all day, got on the plane this morning, straight shot, Dallas to Fargo, American, smooth flight. And, you know, for the entire last 2 years plus, like you, my medical world has been turned upside down. And what I want to do over the next hour or so is go through a base set of information, just the published scientific information on COVID-19, really going to focus on the most pressing issue of the day, which is the immunologic protection that we are given by the products that have been released and that, you know, some of us unfortunately are mandated to take. We'll go over what we know, and then we'll flip it around and go over on treatment of the viral infection. And so with that, let me go ahead and get launched. The first point I'm going to make is we have an experience with a mass inoculation program, and that was the 1976 swine flu pandemic, where we had 220 million Americans, 55 million had received an injection, and sadly, the goal was to actually have everyone take it. But sadly, there was roughly 25 deaths that rose to 43 deaths and 550 cases of Guillain-Barré syndrome or ascending paralysis. And this was enough. And the reports in the news were unclear about causality, but it was enough. With no VAERS system, no Twitter, no internet, the decision was it's not safe. We can't ask people to walk into a center and take one of these and lose their life. So keep that in mind. The threshold in 1976 was 25 lives lost, ultimately rose to 43. Compensation was offered to victims. I'll follow this outline to make a few points with respect to each one of these bullets. The first is new biological products. Anytime there's a new product, a new medicine, a new injectable product, we must demand and expect safety, safety, safety. And over the last 2 years, there have been many promising drugs that have not been approved because of a slight imbalance in safety or a slight question on efficacy. And I mean very slight. There's been several products that, in fact, have not met full FDA approval. So keep that in mind. We demand safety. It doesn't matter how good something is. If it's not safe, it does not get used in our country, period. Those are the standards that we follow. I published an op-ed in The Hill. I was a frequent contributor in the first year by invitation in the journal in Washington, and you can see the title of the paper there. This is before completion of the randomized trials by Pfizer, Moderna, and Johnson & Johnson, before this. And you can see the title of the paper. I had genuine concerns based on the technology, based on the biotechnology that was being proposed. Here's the virus, SARS-CoV-2. Everyone in the room here is a closet virologist now. Everyone, in a sense, has gotten their graduate degree in virology and epidemiology, and you understand these terms. We have to, because we've dealt with this for 2 years now with our families and our social circles. The ball of the virus is called the nucleocapsid, and inside is the helical coils of RNA or ribonucleic acid. But the key thing to know about the virus is the buds on the surface of the spines. It's called the spike protein. All of the pathogenicity and all of the danger of the virus is in the spike protein, all of it. It's 1,200 amino acids, got about a dozen glycosylation side chains. It's got a center hinge called a furin cleavage joint where there looks like there was some intentional manipulation of this in the lab in Wuhan, China, to make it more infectious and more dangerous. But all of the pathogenicity of the virus is in the spike protein. And so the bad idea of the current sets of products that you're asked to take is they all have copied the genetic code for the spike protein, and now insert the genetic code for this lethal protein in the human body with the hopes of having the human body produce enough of the protein to create immunity, but not too much to be lethal. That's the gamble. And I have to tell you, the products, as you can see here, on the right are Pfizer and Moderna, called messenger RNA products, and on the left are Johnson & Johnson, AstraZeneca. Both types of products harness the body's genetic machinery and unfortunately produce the spike protein for an uncontrolled quantity and an uncontrolled duration in each and every person. It's just the opposite of a tetanus shot. A tetanus shot is a set amount of tetanus toxoid, period. Period. No more, no less. With each one of these injections, it's unknown how much of a ride the human body is going to have with the spike protein. So you can imagine a relatively little ride with little exposure, no side effects, maybe a sore arm and we're fine. But how about a vigorous ride? How about a vigorous uptake of lipid nanoparticles, a vigorous imbibing of the genetics, and then a relentless production of spike protein that overwhelms the body and sadly damages the brain or the heart or the bone marrow or the immunologic system, or even worse, is fatal within a few hours or a few days or a few weeks? All of this is possible. It's called the Russian roulette theory of this entire program. And what I mean by that is each person is different, and probably the hemodynamics play a role. And by luck, do a lot of lipid nanoparticles become equally distributed and there's no side effects, or is a big bolus go to the heart or a bolus go to the brain or elsewhere? And there probably is a stochastic nature to this, where someone can get the first one, the second one, and the third one have a disaster. And that's because of this, in a sense, Russian roulette that's happening with each and every one of the injections. Well, concerns were raised over 2021. I was part of this author blog, Bruno and colleagues, 17 countries, 57 authors. I mean, we made it clear. We had great concerns over the safety of the program. And we basically said, listen, countries worldwide, sent this to every country in the world. Said, listen, if we cannot get safety under control with the program, shut it down. Our concerns were that the mechanism of action here was dangerous. We had learned that the spike protein damages cells, tissues, and organs. It's in body fluids, probably donated blood. There's no genotoxicity, teratogenicity, or oncogenicity studies. There was a concerning ovarian biodistribution study from Japan showing the lipid nanoparticles hyperconcentrated in the ovaries. That's the last place we want a vaccine to deliver the spike protein. There were no safety committees. There was no restriction of the groups that are properly excluded from the randomized trials: pregnant women, women at childbearing potential, COVID recovered and suspected COVID recovered. The FDA and the companies knew that those groups, the products were going to be too dangerous, or they weren't going to benefit them, and so they should be excluded. Anytime we exclude people from registrational trials, we never just give it a try in the public program. And that's what we started seeing across the world. It just was wrong. It was wrong from a regulatory law perspective. There was no risk stratification for who really needed them, no data transparency, no mitigation of risks for the public, and no assurances on long-term safety. No one could argue with that, because, in fact, the products were not tested over a long period of time. So each person who has taken one of these products, I don't know if I can move away, maybe I shouldn't. Each person who's taken one of these products, and I assume many people in the audience have, no one knows what long-term happens in the human body. They can't possibly know, because a sufficient duration of time has not transpired. That can't be controversial. Then the news started to break. This paper, Holkin and colleagues from Stanford, published in Cell, found the messenger RNA in human lymph nodes up to 60 days afterwards, and that's as long as they've looked. We thought this was going to get out of the body. It was going to be degraded by RNA ACEs and other ribonucleases, and in fact, it's not. It has 3' and 5' caps that are called pseudouridine caps that appear to be unbreakable. And so this is disturbing to have genetic code for a dangerous protein in the body dwell in our lymph nodes for a prolonged period of time. Then this paper hit, and this is from Malmo, Sweden. The senior doctor is Dr. Yang DeMoranis, and what she showed and her team showed is that Pfizer, given at physiological concentrations in a hepatoma cell line, that Pfizer is actually taken up, the lipid nanoparticles are taken up in cells, and then the RNA is copied by a human reverse transcriptase called line 1, and then the DNA mirror image of the Pfizer product is taken into human chromatome, and is taken into the nucleus. And so this was the first paper to demonstrate what's called reverse transcription. And the CDC has on its website, these will not alter the human genome. This paper just hit a few months ago. It was the first one to say, looks like it probably does. Let me tell you, what was chosen was the 444 base pair in the middle of the 4284 base pair segment. That's called the amplicon. That's where something where they knew it was sufficiently different than housekeeping sequences where it could be identified as a signal. And it was a very strong signal. If it's in the middle, it's extremely likely that the entire code is installed into human DNA. And because there are so many segments of code in the Pfizer code that match human code in order to get the human RNA to read it, it's exceedingly likely that this is entirely installed into the human genome. Now, many labs are racing right now to confirm this. But this is extremely disturbing that an experimental vaccine that was developed to try to provide immunity against SARS-CoV-2, in fact, now is giving the genetic code for this protein that we cannot get out of the human body. If it's installed, and it's installed in a sufficient number of cells, that means parent cells pass it on to daughter cells. That would mean sperm and egg take it up and then pass it on to the embryo and then the fetus and then the baby. This couldn't be more disturbing. This paper, I can't impress upon you, it's in the fully peer-reviewed literature, is very important, and many labs are working to try to replicate it. It's not 100% right now that everything I said is going to be validated, but it's lining up to be very tractable and very worrisome. We should never take genetic products on a mass scale that change the human genome or have the possibility to change the human genome. It should never be done. Why? Because we don't know the future implications to the person's body and to their progeny forever and ever thereafter. Then this paper hit from Harvard, Elena Ogata, showed that the spike protein was measurable in circulating plasma on average for 15 days, but one person up to 29 days. This is extremely worrisome. The spike protein is a killer. With the natural infection, we hope that the spike protein doesn't even appear in the blood. We're hopeful that we could knock out the infection very early on before it invades the body, but we know the spike protein is a killer. It damages organs, it damages blood vessels, and it causes blood clotting. It causes blood clotting. So if the products install the genetic code and they produce the spike protein and the spike protein is measurable in blood, it is unsurprising that blood clots would be a major complication of these products. Then this paper, Banzel and colleagues, showing the spike protein is encapsulated in exosomes. This answered a very important question. Dan Bongino on Fox News, he has his new show now. He asked me one of the best questions a journalist has asked. He said, Dr. McCullough, with these products, when someone takes them, why is it that the immunity runs out after 6 months, but yet the side effects can last a year long? People can get blood clots and problems many months later. And the answer is this. The body is trying to cloak the spike protein in an exosome, or actually even within monocytes. So it's actually immunologically hidden as the body is trying to manage the toxicity of the protein, but yet the protein is damaging as it moves into organs and tissues. We know the spike protein has been found in the brain of people shortly after they've received one of the injections. So we know it passes the blood-brain barrier. We don't know about the placental barrier. The Chinese published this paper early on telling us things don't look good. We're starting to see changes in the blood where it's predicting that once we start using these products in large populations that have problems like diabetes and high blood pressure and blood disorders, we're going to have problems. And they were right. Remember in the major registrational trials, Pfizer, Moderna, J&J, that they were relatively healthy populations. I recall the J&J trials program, 60% of people who took J&J in the clinical trials had no medical problems. Well, what happens when we start using it in people with medical problems, the people we want to protect? The Chinese were telling us that we're going to have problems. What we didn't see is we didn't see a safety review. Once the program was launched in December, January went by, February should have been a safety review. I mean, a press conference. CDC, NIH, FDA, or whoever they want to put as a designee, and a full report, a press briefing. How many people took them? How many side effects? What are we seeing right now? What changes do we need to make in the program? The chances that we would have gotten this right from the beginning are about zero. It never happens in medicine. We always have to make adjustments. Dose too strong, dose not strong enough. A common one is in clinical trials, the products are typically given in single-use vials, where it's one needle per vial and then the injection. But when it gets to the public, now it's one vial, but multiple needles distributed to multiple people. So the needles are being put in there. And so that's the most common cause of oxidation, hypersulfation, contaminants, et cetera. There was no safety checks. There was no safety report. None. We're over a year into this, and no one from our government agencies has come forward and given a full safety report. A to Z, what is happening? That's the reason why you came out tonight. Your departments of community health, no safety report. Your medical systems, no safety report. How about your medical schools? Nothing. Nothing. They've told you nothing outside of line up and take one of these. With no fair, balanced review of safety. We talked at the VIP reception. The consent forms have not been updated in over a year. There are over 1,000 papers published now on side effects, and these consent forms should have been rapidly updated. So the data started pouring in. The vaccine adverse event reporting system showed, the VAERS system showed, a skyrocketing in total reports and a skyrocketing in deaths in 2021. It was unequivocal that this program was unlike all the other inoculations combined. And here's one of the most recent Redbox reports. So if you go to openvaersdata.com and then just toggle over to the U.S. data, you can see the results here. I'm going to move over just so I can see it well. 12,672 Americans, these are Americans, have passed away slightly in a matter of a few hours, a few days, or a few weeks after taking them. There are 5,302 cases of heart damage. 5,000 cases of heart damage. 5,302 cases of heart damage. 13,178 permanently disabled people after taking these. You can see the big upswing in 2021, 2022. Most of the action occurs within the first 30 days. And on the right are the different organ injury syndromes. Never have we seen any product like this in human history. Never. And this is probably a gross underreporting of what's going on. A gross underreporting. The papers are pouring in from all over saying this can happen, and here's the reason why. Here's the reason why the products damage the heart, the brain, the blood vessels, and cause blood clotting. It's in the scientific literature that these products have a really disturbing habit in the human body. This paper hit Columbia, Pantisactos, and Solomon, ResearchGate server. This is the same server that the National Institutes of Health uses. From 0 to 20 weeks in a window, post-injection, the number of deaths could be as high through December as 187,000. The underreporting could be 20 to 1 from theirs. If this is anywhere close to being true, this program is worse than a war. It's worse than a war. There are now dozens of life insurance companies reporting record numbers of deaths in 2021. Record. 40% excess over the prior years. And the actuaries say more than a 10% increase is catastrophic. 40% excess. The concern is through the roof. Everyone knows now someone in their family circle, in their bigger social circles, in their church, in their school, in their town, in their city, who's passed away. Now, I just came off a big tour in Florida, in the panhandle of Florida, and I was with Ryan Cole, who you may know. He's also frequently in the media, pathologist trained at Mayo Clinic. Ryan and I and Chris Wark stopped at a Dunkin' Donuts because we, you know, were getting sleepy, needed some coffee. It was in the morning. We were stopping there waiting for our coffee, and then two ladies came in separately, and they recognized us. They wanted pictures. And then one lady had to tell us her story. She said, Dr. McCullough, Dr. Cole, I took my father to get one of these about 6 months ago. He's elderly. I was concerned. He was concerned. He got it. He got it in his arm. And then on the drive home, he died in the passenger seat next to me. He slumped over and he died. Do you know that our CDC and FDA on the website have said, with no exceptions, none of these deaths are caused by Pfizer, Moderna, and J&J. None. None. Without exception, none. And when that first was first posted on the website in March of 2021, I knew that was malfeasance. I knew that was wrongdoing by those in position of authority. That never happens. I'm in data safety monitoring boards. I do large clinical trials. There's always some attribution of causality. Always. Not an absolute none. Especially when someone gets it and then a few minutes later they die, or people die in the centers right there and they give CPR. It is absolutely unacceptable that our agencies would not own up to the reality that the products could result in death as they have. Look at the temporal relationship, very tightly temporally related to administration of the products. This analysis by McLachlan analyzed the VAERS early in April of 2021. They read all the vignettes, they had doctors code them, and they actually applied a fair adjudication process to the VAERS system. They concluded 86% of the deaths had no other explanation, and that 5%, they were certain, were absolutely due to administration of the product. Certain. This was certain. This was not. This is in the peer-reviewed literature. So while our agencies were telling us, nope, 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 it can't be possible, the science was being published saying, yes, 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 it is. Who was dying? Sadly, it was our seniors. The very people we are trying to, that's the reason why the deaths are so silent, because people are dying towards the end of their life, but it's being accelerated probably by taking one of these. This analysis by Kostoff and colleagues. On the left are the infection death curves, and on the right are the curves after receiving one of the products. And you can see here,
the curves, even though the y-axis is different, the curves match the same shape. The elderly are at risk. And Kostov's analysis was someone at any age range, but certainly at 65 is where he drew this, they were more likely to die by going in and taking one of the mandated products than taking their chances with COVID. And this is before Omicron, which is mild. Why? Because COVID is, you may or may not get, if you pass on the mandated product, you may or may not get it. COVID, the respiratory illness, you may have already had it, so you have some protection, or you may get a mild case, or better yet, you get it, and like Joe Rogan or Aaron Rodgers, you get early treatment and you get through it. So it's a better proposition to pass on the inoculation and take your chances with COVID. That's exactly the choice that Aaron Rodgers made. That's exactly the choice that Djokovic has made. That's exactly the choice that Kyrie Irving has made. Exactly the choice that Jonathan Isaac has made. It's exactly the choice that I have made. And it's an evidence-based choice. This is a fair review of the published evidence. I can tell you this paper was presented on two occasions to the FDA in September, October, in the open sessions of the meetings, and it was not disputed by the FDA. It's not disputed by the FDA. It's a better trade-off to not take it than take it. The American Thinkers summarized there's over 1,000 papers on injury syndromes now, fatal and non-fatal. We don't even need VAERS or yellow card or UDRA. We can just go to the medical literature and now read many, many published papers, 1,000 of them in the peer-reviewed literature. There's an entire guide on the injury syndromes put out by the REACT 19 group that's actually hyperlinked. This is a really good one to get. I provide this with all the various exemptions to employers and say, listen, take a look at all the injuries. If you mandate this on your employees, this is what happens to the employees. It's a big deal for employers now to have disabled workers and to have workers put in the hospital, workers with heart damage, blood clots, on blood thinners. That's what the employers are getting when they mandate this on their employees. The biggest issue, though, most of you are here, many of you are here because of younger individuals and the idea that younger individuals who have negligible risk for the infection, that have negligible risk for severe outcomes, in fact, are being encouraged or being pressured or being coerced or being forced into taking one of these. It is, seems to most that it's over the line, that this is something that, why is there a hyper-focus on young people for a genetic form of therapy? And we've almost lost sight of the elderly. You almost never see the elderly mentioned in this whole discussion anymore. Now it's young people getting a form of genetic therapy. Our CDC has told us 75% of young people, children, have already had the illness now. It's too late. Remember, these products are only FDA approved for someone who has not had the infection to prevent it. Once you've had it, the infection, it's like mumps. It's too late to get the inoculation. It's too late. It's only approved to reduce the binary incidence of the respiratory infection. The FDA has granted no claims for reducing hospitalization because it's never was shown in randomized trials, or reducing death because it has not reduced death in randomized trials. It only reduces the binary incidence with the earlier strains. And as I'll share with you, that claim of efficacy has really waned over time as the virus has mutated greatly. Papers now pouring in, Avolio and colleagues showing, now the spike protein shown in blue here damages pericytes, cardiac cells. We in cardiology, I'm an internist and a cardiologist, spend our entire careers preventing heart damage and protecting against heart damage. People develop blockages and we put in stents because we're trying to save even the tiniest amount of heart damage. We do not allow a single drop of heart damage. It's against our profession. We do not accept heart damage and heart attacks. We try to prevent heart attacks. We preserve the heart at all costs. Why? Because we need it our entire lives, and you can't grow back new heart tissue. We never allow heart damage. Never. Never. Think about that. Never. We don't wave a hand and say, oh, here, you take some heart damage, or you take some heart damage. You'll be okay. Never. Completely and totally unacceptable. Tracy Hoag and Allison Krug and Josh Stevenson published from UC Irvine. 86% of young people incurring heart damage after taking one of these are put in the hospital. Healthy boys have a higher chance of being hospitalized with heart damage, myocarditis, than ever being hospitalized with the respiratory infection. That's absurd. It's absurd to take a product with this idea that you're preventing something, but in fact, you go in the hospital more often with the heart damage than you ever would with what you're trying to prevent. It would be absurd that any school or any camp or any travel agency or any government or any city would ever mandate this on young people when the published literature shows that it's causing serious heart damage. This paper from Kaiser Permanente shows the rates are through the roof. The highest risk is in boys, with 90% of cases are in boys, ages 18 to 24, and the rate is 537.1 per million based on their estimates. The CDC said they thought the rate was going to be 62 cases per million. And the background rate before SARS-CoV-2, before all this, the background rate, which it can happen with parvovirus or adenovirus, is 4 cases per million. 4. It's clear 537 compared to 4 is through the roof. And now social media is full of cases of young people. And we see reel after reel of athletes that we don't know if in fact they've suffered damage or not. A few athletes have just come out and said, yeah, I have it. I've taken damage. Fabienne Trump, who's a marathoner from Switzerland, she said, yeah, I'm a kind of triple acceptor of the products, and now I've got heart damage. Now, I published this paper with Jessica Rose. 90% of the cases are blue boys, and you can see here the distribution. It extends all the way up into the 60s. It's not just a problem of young boys. So now men who are at risk already for heart problems or may already have heart problems, now they're at risk for additional heart damage due to one of these products. The most disturbing papers have come from Jenna Schauer, and they've been published in the journal Pediatrics. These are all young people who have myocarditis or heart inflammation after taking one of these products. You can see here that some of the presentations are very subtle, just some generalized muscle aches or some general fever, no chest pain or no new symptoms of heart failure. And you can see in the lower panel, 100% have heart damage, substantial heart damage by MRI called late gadolinium enhancement, 100%. With the respiratory illness, these types of studies have been done, and they weren't able to show MRI substantial evidence of heart damage. There would be an occasional patient with severe COVID that could have an elevation in troponin, but they did MRI studies of NCAA athletes, what have you, they couldn't find it. They gave up on it. So COVID, the respiratory illness, actually does not cause this form, Frust, of myocarditis, but indeed the genetic products do. And now Schauer's followed this up, and this is really disturbing. Here's an example case, 16-year-old male. Now, 4.4 months later, the amount of damage, late gadolinium enhancement or scar, 26% down to 19.84%. So it's going down, but it's not going down promptly. Let me tell you, I can tell you as a cardiologist, more than 15% scar or late gadolinium enhancement, that's our threshold for putting in an ICD, because he could have a cardiac arrest. Can you imagine the young people who are in their 15, 16, 17 years old taking ICDs that we're going to be looking at in the future? Now they're committed to a pacemaker-like device for the rest of their life. This is a journey our children do not have to take and should not take. You're looking right at the data. You're looking right at the information.
You make your own conclusion. I am telling you as a cardiologist, more than 15% we put in ICDs. I do not want to see a child that I recommend to receive a permanent implantation of a defibrillator when it's all avoidable. And worse than this, paper by Choi and colleagues, 22-year-old man in Korea takes Pfizer, develops chest pain for 5 days, and then in the hospital, 7 hours later, he dies. They can't save him. The heart, as shown here, is loaded with inflammation. The heart should be basically uniform pink. All this white and blue in there is inflammation, loaded. They conclude he dies of Pfizer-induced myocarditis, unequivocal. Now remember, our CDC and FDA have said not a single case was due to the product, not a single case, but yet these papers are being published showing clearly they die of the condition. Now this paper, Gill and colleagues from Connecticut, coroner's office, supported by pathology at University of Michigan and University of Minnesota. Two teenage boys, days 3 and 4 after the second Pfizer shot, found dead at home by their parents. They don't even get a chance to have CPR. The parents are horrified, obviously. They request autopsies. The autopsies are done. Both cases clear. It's fatal myocarditis, probably was superimposed what's called catecholamine effect or injury, meaning there must have been a struggle at the end of life. And in fact, a big surge of adrenaline can make things worse. And that may be the mechanism why athletes can die with myocarditis. You know, when someone has myocarditis, by the way, we cannot let them participate in sports until it's resolved. Cannot. And you can imagine everyone taking these products and then going out and playing soccer and playing and really exerting themselves and having sudden death on the field. We are up to overseas now, 700 witnessed sudden deaths on the field. 700. More than ever been seen in all of professional sports in 2021 since the release of these products. This paper by Tishopi and colleagues prior to COVID suggests with myocarditis in young people that 34% are going to sustain some permanent damage to the heart and not completely recover. And then in yellow, 13% are going to be deep into it, deep into heart damage. And when I was on the Joe Rogan interview, Joe, it wasn't me, but Joe knew the vignette of a young woman up here in the upper Midwest who had myocarditis after one of these. And she went all the way. She was in that yellow group, progressed all the way to needing a heart transplant, got a heart transplant, and then she died of an infection afterwards. So she became another fatal case. He knew the vignette. It's happening. It's happening. I was just in the Ohio State House, and there was a whole presentation on injuries. And there was a man, Hispanic man from South Texas. Some of you may know him, Ernesto. And Ernesto presented the case of his 16-year-old son. And it's broken his heart that he took his son in for one of these, and now he had to bury his son. It's completely unnecessary. It's completely unnecessary. The kids do fine with this illness. Even if a child has cystic fibrosis or asthma or congenital heart or lung disease, we can treat them easily, and I've advised on these cases. The only children who get admitted with the viral respiratory infection are those who are denied early treatment. That's it. This is a treatable condition. It's not a condition. And I testified under oath in the U.S. Senate, one case is too many. One. One case is unacceptable for all of America. One case. And you're looking at two that I just showed you in a handful. There'll be more. One case is unacceptable. And what people have proposed is saying, you know, it's pretty rare. It's pretty rare. So that's going to be okay. Accept the rarity of it. And if it's your child and you have the bad luck on this, that's going to be kind of on you. We don't accept rare things that are fatal when they're not needed to begin with. Okay? These products are the genetic code for a lethal protein
devised in a lab in Wuhan, China. If you have a perfectly healthy child, I can tell you that giving that child repeated injections of the foreign genetic code for a lethal Chinese protein every 6 months cannot make that child healthier. It cannot. The child's health will not be improved. It cannot be made healthier. A healthy child cannot be made healthier by an investigational, experimental injection given every 6 months. It can't be any more clear than that. It can't be any more clear than that. There isn't a single person who can come forward and say, Dr. McCullough, my child is going to be healthier. It's impossible. It's impossible. The only thing that can happen are the chances that something really horrible can happen. And without protection from the pharmaceutical laws and the regulatory laws, we're in trouble. The news is breaking. Pfizer, under court order, had to release documents of what they knew what was going on with their product. Remember, Aaron Seary and the Public Health and Professional Review Committee, of which I chair, sued the FDA and Pfizer. The lawyer for the FDA did not want to release the documents for 55 years. That's the FDA did not want to release the documents to you for 55 years. It can't be any more disturbing than that. Our FDA, which is supposed to be our protector, our safety watchdog, did not want to release this to you for 55 years. They didn't want to release to you what? They didn't want to release to you that Pfizer knew within 90 days that there were 1,223 deaths and 1,291 serious adverse events of interest. Our FDA did not want you to know this. Forget Pfizer. Our FDA did not want you and me to know this. They were fighting hard that it would be 55 years before we knew. Let me tell you, 50 deaths with any new product, the company has an obligation to get it off the market. Get it off the market and do a safety review. 50. That's the generally accepted limit. Listen, in 1976, it was 25. It was 25. Wait, 25? 1223, Pfizer had hired 600 employees just to answer the phone calls from family members as people died after they took them. It can't be any more egregious. Look at this. CNN correspondents going on Sesame Street seducing children into taking these. Look at this. Our president of the United States barking out a command. Just get it. Just get it. He works for us, not vice versa. He doesn't issue commands to us. He doesn't issue commands to us. He doesn't. And no one, under any circumstances, at any time, tells you and me to take an investigational product, which is the genetic code for a lethal protein devised in a lab in China against our will, and then suffer health consequences. No one. No one. Period. And this whole program crumbles if people will stand up and have the courage to say, no, I decline. That means immediately in the U.S. military, it crumbles if our military men would dig in deep and have enough courage to just say no, all of them. And guess what? They have the opportunity every 6 months because it keeps coming up. It's not a one-time thing. So if they don't have the courage initially, maybe after 6 months they get the courage. So if you have people, family and friends in the military, give them a bolus of courage. They're supposed to be protecting them. They're supposed to be protecting us. They can't even protect their own bodies, for crying out loud. How can they protect us? We have a deficiency of courage and discernment and guts. And guts. Now, I was at a faculty meeting in Florida, and I really got fired up, kind of like I'm getting fired up now.
And there was a lot of military people there. This is around kind of Fort Walton Beach area, Destin area. And one guy just started yelling out, I'm insulted by what you're saying, Dr. McCullough. I've been in the military my whole life. My whole military career is on the line. My military retirement's on the line. I could be facing a court-martial. You don't understand what we're going through. You know, and I didn't really know how to handle that. I respect the military. You know, my son had gotten into the Naval Academy. It's one of my great regrets that maybe I didn't have any military experience myself, and I didn't know how to handle it. And later on, it was actually the next morning, I didn't sleep that good that night. And I talked to Carrie Madej. Some of you know her. She was on faculty too. And I asked Carrie, I said, Carrie, that was such a charged interchange. This guy actually stormed out in front of everybody. And there's probably about 100 people in the room. And I asked Carrie, I said, how would you handle that? She goes, I know how I'd handle it. She goes, I would tell him. I would die before I took one of these. I would die. How does that stack up to your military retirement? See, everybody's trying to save their own skin. Everyone's like, how, you know, it's my job. How do I get an exemption? How do I save my skin for another 6 months? I tell you how you save your skin is how you save the skin of your country and the whole world is just tell them, no, it's not happening. No one can force a needle in your arm or force a pill down your throat against your will. And if we start letting that happen, and forcing it against your will means you do it for your company or you do it to travel. This is the most slipperiest slope we could ever be on. If you don't want something in your body, you better have the guts to stand up and tell people it's not going in your body. Okay? The products are not safe for human use on either side of the Atlantic. This is not conjecture. Dr. Tess Lowry leads the evidence-based consulting group in the UK in June of 2021, wrote a 20-page plus report clearly analyzing the Elicar data and concluding not safe for human use. Pull them off the market. There's been citizen petition into the FDA. I know because I was on one led by Peter Doshi and Linda Westila from University of Maryland saying they're not safe enough for approval. They're not safe enough to fully approve, and they're not fully approved. None of them are. Now, Moderna and Comirnaty have biological license agreements, but they haven't fulfilled the criteria for this. They haven't done the studies or committed to the studies of myocarditis. They don't have package inserts. The consent form hasn't changed. It's still under emergency use authorization, period. Now, what about efficacy? We've reviewed safety. Do we get anything out of these? Do we get anything out of these? These look so good coming out of development, you know, 90% protection. What do we get out of them? And what's happened is the virus has unfortunately mutated beyond the reach of these products. Now, the best source of evidence to make a claim that they reduce severity of the illness is this paper by the Ivy Group, federally funded group, published in JAMA. And here you can see those who fully took the mandated products versus those who are not. You can see here that the rate of death in those who, you know, were in a sense completely up to date on their program was 6.3%, and those who never took a single one, the rate of death in the hospital is 8.6%. It is lower for the group that took them, but it's not statistically significant. This is it. There's no randomized trial data supporting it, and everything else has a tremendous amount of bias, a tremendous amount of bias. There is a biased source of literature trying to suggest these products do way, way more. Oh, that they reduce hospitalization. They make it easier to get through. They reduce death. None of those claims are supportable. This is the best source of evidence that one could find. The Swedes have done a matched case pair analysis. This is just for the outcome of symptomatic infection. 90% efficacy at first, but look, after 6 months, it goes down to 23% for Pfizer and 69% for Moderna. Now there's 22 studies showing they don't last 6 months. None of them do. That's the reason why boosters are needed. If a product doesn't provide at least 50% protection, at least for a year, it's not viable. We don't do these types of things every 6 months. We never do. We didn't accept that for hepatitis B or for pneumococcal pneumonia or tetanus or influenza. It's unacceptable to be on an every 6 month injection program. No one thinks that is okay. And the problem is we're trying to key up a mass immunity against a single protein that's now extinct. And we're fooling with Mother Nature. This paper was published by Singarajam and colleagues, and it broke in 2021. The data were clear that 39% of transmission was from those who fully took the products to those who also fully took the products. They were fully protected. Our CDC director fairly came out and told Americans in the summer of 2021, they don't stop transmission. They don't. She told us they don't stop transmission. That should have been a key to the military to never mandate these, because the military boys are going to get sick and pass it to each other. That meant to all the universities, don't mandate it. All the employers, don't mandate. The only reason to mandate a product like this is to, in a sense, protect your workplace or your workforce. It doesn't do that. It doesn't do that. Yet the mandates happened because of what's called countermeasures, emergency countermeasures, which is an explanation for the flow of money and the flow of encouragement and force to try to force this on the population. To create quotas, get a certain percent of the population to take it, and then you get a carrot. Countermeasures. And so nobody actually listened to the science of the CDC or listened to the science, in this case published in Lancet, that they weren't going to stop transmission. Then we had Omicron. Omicron's the most highly mutated form of the virus. We still have it today, as shown in the lower left-hand corner. It has dozens and dozens of mutations, so there's different permutations to have different subvariants. The broad immunity of Omicron is afforded to all the subvariants of Omicron, but also back immunity against Delta. And our CDC told us in their own journal, the MMWR, that 79% of Omicron patients were fully immunized with one of the products. It should be clear to America that they had completely failed in stopping the pandemic. Yet some people still espouse that without the products, COVID would have been much worse. I don't know how it can be that way when the majority who get the illness have actually already taken one of the mandated products. Here's the most recent curve. We're down off the Omicron outbreak, which is about 5 to 10 times as higher than Alpha and Delta. We almost have now exclusively BA2. But we're at an incredibly low level right now. We're at the lowest levels we've seen since the onset of the pandemic. I was on radio yesterday in Louisiana, and I learned among 4.7 million inhabitants of Louisiana, the current numbers of people in the hospital with the respiratory illness is 60. 60. Hospitals are empty. Hospitals are empty. Remember, emergency is defined by most municipalities as the risk of overflowing the hospitals with cases. That's how it is in our county, Dallas County, 15%. We get more than 15% hospital census, we could start to lose capacity. That's an emergency. We're down to 0% in the hospital. There are studies now where with Omicron, nobody gets hospitalized. There is no emergency. I presented just an hour or two before former President Trump at CPAC months ago, and I told America, the emergency phase is over. It's over. There is no emergency. Return to normal. There's no emergency. There will be residual cases. We're on a slight rise right now that may get worse. That's okay. We have plenty of ways to treat it. The emergency is gone. No one here should accept the idea that we're under an emergency. There is no emergency countermeasures that should be applied at this point in time. We return to normal, and doctors will retreat. We'll treat the remaining high-risk cases. What have we done? We have created a large population, as shown here, with Delta and Omicron, where the amount of virus in the nose is no different whether you've taken one, two, or three of them. No different. It doesn't work. People cough and sneeze it out when they get it, whether or not they've taken one of these or not. This was published in JAMA, and they did careful analysis of viral load. It's the same in somebody who passed on them to somebody who's taken three shots. It's the same.
Now this paper, Sharon Amit, looking at fourth doses, you can see here that the overall efficacy way less than 50%, actually less than, looks like Moderna here is 10% protection, 10%. I mean, it's terrible. It doesn't do anything. But the good news is down below, nobody gets hospitalized or dies because it's such a mild illness. So the silver lining is it doesn't matter if you take a third shot or a fourth shot. It doesn't matter. It's over with. It's like a common cold. This is published in the New England Journal of Medicine. What's the problem? The problem is if you keep taking them over and over again, there are now signs that it backfires. Look at this. This is from Public Health Scotland. The orange bar are the people who actually were compliant. They took all their mandated products. Look what happened. They didn't get any protection. It's actually better off if you didn't. Now, the blue, to be fair, a lot of people in blue have already had the natural infection, so they have better protection, but it's obviously backfired. We had data that come out. It's on my Twitter feed now from Ontario. The same thing. The same thing. It's backfiring. It provides no protection against hospitalization and death. In fact, the respiratory infection, Omicron, is almost like getting its own booster. And our European Medicine Agency and WHO for a while called to the end of these. They've changed their mind a few times, but I can tell you there's not a strong view that we should take these. Now there's three papers, Subramanian, Kampf, and Beatty, show that the program is backfiring worldwide. 89% of countries show an increase in deaths per million directly due to the causal impact of, in a sense, fooling with Mother Nature and forcing everybody to try to take one of these. So we must pivot to early treatment. I testified in the U.S. Senate on this on two occasions. We should have had a team on trying to reduce the spread, on early home treatment, late treatment, and on overall herd immunity. We didn't have that balanced approach. Whether someone's taken one of these or not, they still need early treatment if they're at high risk. And our seniors, and these are the two seminal papers that I helped publish, the early treatment papers that became the foundation of what's called the McCullough Protocol, but we used the precautionary principle that this was a mass casualty event. We can't wait for large randomized trials of single drugs. Single drugs aren't going to work. It's complex. We weren't using single drugs in the hospital to begin with. It's a multi-drug approach. We needed drugs with a signal of benefit, acceptable safety, and put them into combination. We knew that there was viral proliferation, that there was inflammation or cytokine storm, and thrombosis. We knew there was a long time that we could treat patients at home before mortality escalated, and we had lots of laboratory tools to do it. So the premise was there. And this is the reason why the early treatment papers were so fundamental to getting America through the pandemic. And I testified in November of 2020, and I told America, I looked in the camera in the U.S. Senate, I said, if we don't do this, we're going to be horrified with what's happened. Because when it, you know, the city that got overwhelmed was Milan. They got overwhelmed. They had 1,000 doctors die, and they ran out of personal protective equipment. It was a mess. I said, let's not do this. Let's treat it at home where we reduce the spread of infection. We keep people at home, we don't overwhelm the hospitals, and we get people through it, get our population through it. This is the overall sequence multi-drug approach. I'm not going to go through it, but suffice it to say, 4 to 6 drugs in a sequence combination can get people through the illness. Shown here in gray, monoclonal antibodies, which is the most frequent term Joe Rogan and I talked about, are wonderful products. They came through Operation Warp Speed, wonderful product. The Pfizer product looked very good in clinical trials. There's some questions now about it post-release. But our other products, as shown here, we've used them all the way through, and they're tried and true. Hydroxychloroquine, there's over 300 supportive studies. A modest effect, about a 25% benefit. Ivermectin, over 70 studies, over 35 randomized trials, about a 55% benefit. The Pfizer drug, about an 85% benefit, but only one trial, and now some questions regarding it. Merck product, about 30% benefit, but we use corticosteroids, other drugs, and sequence combination. The single most important point is to start treatment early, within the first 3 days of treatment. This is a paper by Fazio and colleagues I was in the author block on, where we do testing different combinations in Italy. That's the golden time. 100% of people who get hospitalized and die with this illness do so because they do not get sufficient early treatment. Most people get no early treatment. What's one of the most important things I've learned? Nasal virucidal washes. This is povidone iodine, half a teaspoon, shot glass of water, pinch of salt, squirt it up the nose, sniff it back, spit it out the mouth,
twice on both sides and gargle. This is the most effective thing you can do. Every household in Fargo needs to have a bottle of this or hydrogen peroxide and make sure you're ready because it works for the common cold or the next variant. Here's one of 12 clinical studies. Very impressive. It knocks down the infectivity within 3 days. It renders the vast majority of people non-infectious within 3 days. Nothing does this. No other product does this because it's a nasal infection. Instead of using hand sanitizers and sprayers and all this stuff, just treat it in the nose before it invades the body. Look at the outcomes. Reduced rates of hospitalization and death. This is just one intervention. Can you imagine using multiple things in combination? Now, we use nasal washes all the time in clinical practice. Even a GOP congresswoman says, why aren't our federal agencies instructing the public how to do this? How come your medical school in town didn't instruct the people of Fargo to do this? This is so simple. 12 supportive clinical studies. It works for early treatment very well. Very well. Way better than hand sanitizer. Way better than masks. Way better than inoculations. Simply washing the nose with a virucidal agent and gargling. Now, why do we use the other drugs? Hydroxychloroquine, ivermectin, prednisone, colchicine? Because the FDA tells us to. This is the FDA guidance that says a reason to prescribe off-label drugs is when doctors are fulfilling an unmet need. Now there's home treatment guides. This is the AAPS guide. It's also on truthforhealth.org. Every family should have a COVID home treatment guide. We treat the viral infection to handle the crisis. Does it work? Well, there's three outcome studies. I was involved in this one, FAIR comparator group. No multi-drug randomized trials yet, but a 75% reduction in death and an 87% reduction in hospitalization. Shown in three different places, New York State, Dallas, Texas, and Marseille, France. Many of you have been through the illness. How many people have had it? Yeah, probably about a good 60%. You didn't have as much up here as some places, but 60% have had it. Well, the CDC says roughly half of Americans have had it. Now, you can see through the fall, 146 million Americans. Sadly, most of the real morbidity was incurred in our seniors, 65 and older. But look at all the activity in terms of inoculation, 253 million people inoculated. So between the respiratory illness and between the inoculations, almost everybody's been exposed to the spike protein now. There's very few untouched bodies in America. Okay, because people were compliant. Look at the rates of giving the mandated products. You can see here, there's two big waves initially in the spring with this enthusiasm, then it dropped off, then the mandates, and then it dropped off again. Right now, we're at the lowest rates of taking them ever. And you can see here, there's on the top is the booster program. Only 25% of Americans have taken a booster within 6 months. You can see that we pretty much have fallen out of this every 6 months program. It's not working right now. And I don't know if any of you have seen the Walgreens tracker. The Walgreens tracker on the internet is giving the rates of positivity. The lowest rates were 8% in those who were kind of pure and untouched, up to 16% of those who had taken triple administration. So it's just the opposite of what you'd think. Now there's a risk if you've already recovered from the infection and then go ahead and take one of these products. And the denial of natural immunity is very dangerous because if we go ahead and inoculate on top of already having the infection, the complications go through the roof, and the denial of this is terrible. Most recently, the state of Tennessee just put into law, just like in Texas, we have executive order, that the natural immunity must be recognized. Why are you here tonight? Because freedom's at risk. We're galvanizing around freedom. We should never link freedom to a pill or to a parental agent. Never, never, never. Our medical freedom is linked to our social and economic freedom. If we break the medical freedom, if we succumb to taking one of these to keep our job or to stay in the military or stay in school, the whole thing begins to fracture because it comes up again. It's not a one-time thing. It's not a tattoo. It's every 6 months one has to keep doing that. The censorship is unbelievable. Do you know California has got a law that is being proposed that would prohibit what we're doing right now? A fair presentation of scientific data. Prohibited. Prohibited. Ron Johnson knows it. He's an American hero. He's held the U.S. Senate testimony, the most recent one, 5 hours, January 24th, 2022. Get the 38-minute highlight version on YouTube. It's full of truth bombs. About a dozen doctors who learned how to treat the infection, molecular biology experts, genetic experts, patients, attorneys. It was a real tour de force. We're afraid that the human mind is not thinking correctly right now. People in the corporate boardroom are not thinking correctly. People at the top of the military, not thinking correctly. People at your university, not thinking correctly. You know, they didn't want a discussion on this over there. Not thinking correctly. Do you know that the Chinese are wearing hazmat suits right now and tackling each other and stuffing PCR swabs? There was a newsreel where they were spraying a guy's shoes. They make little kids wear hazmat suits. They're killing pets in China. The virus doesn't come out of the shoes. We don't even use it. I've treated hundreds of COVID patients. I've never worn a hazmat suit. We don't need hazmat suits. They've lost their minds. It should be obvious they've lost their minds. It should be obvious if a company is mandating one of these, they've lost their minds. And they need to be treated as if they've lost their minds. This isn't okay. If your doctor tells you you should take one of these, he's, in a sense, he's lost his mind or her mind. A recent survey by Texas A&M, a confidential survey, anonymous survey, 10% of doctors didn't think they were safe or effective. 10%. Now, only a tiny fraction have the guts, just like a tiny fraction of the military have the guts to actually step out and do something about it. A tiny fraction. But 10%, you know, behind closed doors say, uh-uh. And I can tell you that number will grow over time because it's going to get worse. The more we take of these, the more blood clots, the more heart damage, the more deaths. It's not going to stop. It's not going to stop. It's pretty clear. The more we do this, the more damage that will occur. There's now two books, one, The Psychology of Totalitarianism from Matthias Desmond and Mark McDonald, The United States of Fear, explain psychologically how people can lose their minds in what's called mass formation. Now, what are we doing about it? Joe Rogan helped a lot. I've been on Daystar. I personally, I think now, have reached about 1.7 billion out of the 7 billion people on the planet. I'm doing everything I can, but I need your help, okay? I need your help. Each one of you can help. Each one of you can help. In your circles, start to express your concerns. I'm concerned about what I'm seeing. The blood clots, the heart damage, the deaths, the people dying with no explanation. I'm concerned about doctors not recognizing what's going on. Keep your awareness high. It's very, very important. I can tell you, when I gave my speech out in front of the crowd at the Lincoln Memorial on a cold January day, January 23rd, I stopped a couple times and I listened. There was nobody in the crowd saying, yeah, these are good things. We should take some more of them. Nobody. There's no rally across town celebrating Moderna or Pfizer. None. There's no Fargo Pfizer party tonight. I know that. It's not happening. It's a dark, grim world on the other side. Your side is joyous. It's clear. It's discerning. Because you have the truth. Very important. And we've got it all in the Senate record. You don't have to say this is hearsay. People under sworn oath have all these citations, all the science, and we invited all the public health officials. We had chairs for them, all the people you know of, and not a single one had the courage to show. Not a single one had the respect to show from senior scientists and doctors who learned how to treat the infection, who know the data, know the trials inside out. They didn't have the respect to show up. And I can tell you, if they did, they would not survive a minute of it. The shame and the guilt and the remorse and the complicity that they've been involved with is going to haunt them the rest of their career. Tom Renz, that big back to you right now, presented the Department of Defense database data that suggests that rates of miscarriages, blood clots, heart damage, cancer, death have doubled, tripled, quadrupled in the military in a year. In a year. Our military is going through worse than a war right now, and we're not at war. We're at war with things that we're giving to ourselves in the military. If you want to learn more, this is a terrific book laying the foundations of how things were organized and planned and organized to make this happen all over the world. And it's really, really disturbing. I'm not an expert on this. I wrote one of the introductions, But I think everybody should read it. I think it's down to just a couple dollars. Dr. Bregan just wants everybody to get. This is nonfiction. Every single patent, every single material transfer contract. How are the French working with the Chinese? What are the connections between the U.S. government, the NIH, the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, the EcoHealth Alliance, Gavi, CEPI, Gates Foundation, Rockefeller Foundation, World Economic Forum, Wuhan Institute in China? It's a web of global predators. This is a good read. So to finish and conclude, the COVID-19 pandemic is a global disaster. Its pathophysiology is complex. It's not amenable to a single drug. The pre-hospital phase is the therapeutic opportunity window. Early treatment saves lives, prevents hospitalizations and deaths, and we have a bevy of products. Every doctor in this town who's a family practice doctor, internist, and medical specialist ought to have the skills to treat COVID-19. Give them a call and say, listen, if my grandmother gets it or if I get it, are you ready to treat me? If the answer is no, say, who do you refer to? Remember, failure to treat and failure to refer is mismalpractice. They have to have an answer for you. Put them on the line and make sure they know. Listen, all you can have doctor's visits, ask them, what's the action plan, doctor, when I get it? Okay? The genetic products are just simply have an unfavorable safety profile. They're not safe enough for me today. Okay? They're just not safe. They don't meet the grade. Okay? And I've already had COVID, so it's too late anyway. The protection is not sufficient, complete, or durable. Censorship and reprisal are working to crush us. This is Jen Elson. She was terrific in Kansas. We've weighed out tonight like an angel. We've weighed out the evidence. You've listened to Chris Kobach. You've listened to me. We have Kim Witzak, who's testified to the FDA. Kim's going to come up and give her firsthand account of things. And the truth, like St. Augustine said, is like a lion. The truth is like a lion. Let it out. It can defend itself. You have the truth. You have it. It's in your hands. You have it. Take it. Take it. It will take care of you. The truth will take care of you. The truth will come out. One of the things we said behind stage just at the very end, we said, listen, the truth is going to come out. We can't stop it. Final slide. Call to action. Drop all these mandates immediately. Drop them and push for them to be dropped. Prohibit all forms of pressure, coercion, or threat of reprisal for taking one of these. Ban all forms of discrimination. Can't have it. Not in our society, not in my America, not in yours. Pause the current products. They're not safe enough. They got problems. Their house is on fire. Our FDA commissioner is a friend of mine. His house is on fire. What is he waiting for? Get them off the market. Get them off the market. Need to do a safety review. Begin injury treatment centers at major medical centers. And we need a nationwide pivot because there will be some people get sick in the next few months to early treatment. And we've got this. Thank you so much for your attention.